I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that, they're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
World here with a brand new pipe bomb of CM Jew's wrestling reviews. On this pipe bomb, we go all the way back to 2003 as we get set to judge the WWE with Judgment Day 2003. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new episode of CM Jew's wrestling reviews. I'm so excited because this is actually one of my favorite pay-per-views. And for those who know me, it's more in particular to one match. The rest of the card, you know, it's hit or miss. But again, we'll get into that. The funny thing is, actually, we are almost recording this podcast to the day that this pay-per-view premiered. Because this pay-per-view was on May 18th, 2003, which is a Sunday, and funny enough, I'm recording this on Saturday, May 17th, which means tomorrow is May 18th. I just found that very interesting. There were 9 matches to go through, 10 if you include the dark match. But this was 2003. This was really about halfway to 2002. There was this new era that, you know, you could really look at it, that started to form. And if you look at starting in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, there was a 5-year period where the WWE, I felt, was just always smoking, you know. Again, the Attitude Era had built it up, and they were just carrying on with the Attitude Era. Started. And then, of course, they would start losing it in 2008 when they started to go PG. But again, when you think about this period, you know, again, when you think about 2005, 2006, 2007, you know, you're thinking about WrestleMania's 20, 21, 22, 20, I guess, yeah, well, maybe not 2008, maybe the later half of 2008, I'll say. It really somewhat started to go down, possibly. Maybe I'm thinking more of 2009. I'd have to look it up. I say that because I'm like, I'm thinking of it. I'm like, 23 in 2008? No. It was around the year 2000. Yeah, it was around 2009. Because it was around when WrestleMania 24 happened. And that was the start, I felt, the start of it. I think when a lot of people felt. But again, this was carrying on that thing. Because again, you had the established wrestlers like Undertaker, Triple H there, and of course some returning like Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash and such. You know, Hulk Hogan was sort of ending his us or some like 1-2 year comeback to the WWE. But you also had a lot of new wrestlers like Brock Lesnar, like John Cena, you know, like the Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, along with some established mid-carders who were breaking through to the main card ranks, like Christian and Chris Jericho had already done it, but RVD, Booker T, a lot of people came over from WCW. A lot of interesting things with this theme. This is the pay-per-view debut of La Resistance, Savannah Grande and Rene Dupree. It's also the first time we see TNA, Test and Scott Steiner, with Stacy Keibler. No, I'm thinking of something else. I'm sorry. But this short-lived team, at least, of Test and Scott Steiner with Stacy Keibler in that storyline. The FBI with Chuck Palumbo and Johnny Stromboli with Nunzio is part of this pay-per-view. I'm like, oh my god, I forgot about them. Mr. America, and of course, the pay-per-view debut, technically, as far as him being on a pay-per-view, even though not wrestling, of Zach Gowen. So many interesting things. It was the return of Val Venus, away from his right to censor gimmick that he had been doing for about a year. Just so many interesting things when I look at the paper. And of course, my favorite match of the pay-per-view, which technically can't be called a match, but we will get to that challenge when we get to it. And by the way, it will be after the break, because it's the fifth match in the card. But that's all stuff that we're going to be going over in just a couple of minutes. I really, really, this is one of the pay-per-views I was really looking forward to reviewing and doing this podcast. Because, again, even though it is for that one match, it was interesting to go back and watch the rest of the matches that I didn't remember. And I was pleasantly surprised by a lot of them, pretty much. So, why don't we say we get into Judgment Day 2003, shall we? So, Judgment Day 2003... taking place on May 18th, 2013, at the Charlotte Coliseum in Charlotte, North Carolina, aka Flatter Country, with an attendance of 13,000, which is, wow, when you think about that, a pay-per-view of 13,000, that's like a Raw show in a very small town, when you think about it. It's like, when you think about like the pay-per-views now, and it's like 30,000, and the such, I'm like, oh my god. Sponsor was Clarisse, because, when you think of professional wrestling and big, strong men pouting the shit out of each other, you think of Clarisse. But again, the Raw and SmackDown brands coming together for Judgment Day 2003. Of course, it had the tagline of "You will be judged," but considering what happens at the end of this pay-per-view and what has happened recently, the tagline should be "He tried to pin him with a forklift." Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Judgment Day 2003. Start off actually with our dark match that we're not gonna go too much on, because again, the WWE Network doesn't show the dark matches. Hopefully, at one point they will post up Sunday Night Heats. I actually hope they do. That way, I can go back and watch. And I'm calling them dark matches. They're not. They're matches that took place on Sunday Night Heat as part of the pay per view. You know, again, basically, we old, ye early, you know, pre-show match. As WWE does now on YouTube and before the pay-per-views. In this case, it was the Hurricane, Shane Helms, versus Stevie Richards, and the Hurricane defeated Stevie Richards, which, and I'm sure it was a very, I can't remember it, to be quite honest, as none of these matches are probably memorable, that took place on Sunday Night Heat. They were the warm-up, and their matches you would also see on SmackDown and Raw and the like. But I'm sure it was pretty fun being that with the Hurricane, because the Hurricane was always a fun character. Shane Helms did a great job with that character in its run. But we have Judgment Day. Now, the pay-per-view proper starts off, actually, with a Stone Cold Steve Austin promo. This is the time where you actually had co-GMs on both brands. On SmackDown, the co-GMs were Stephanie and Vince, and Stephanie would a lot of times screw it to Vince. Okay, that sounds wrong, and that sounds incestual, but I meant, like, you know, backstab her father, and, you know, if he would do one thing for a villain wrestler, she would do one thing for the babyface. And you sort of had the same thing on Raw, but in that case, it was, the villain GM was Eric Bischoff, and the face GM was Stone Cold Steve Austin. And so there's this whole thing throughout, and I'm going to get it out right now, throughout the pay-per-view to where, you know, Eric Bischoff and Stone Cold are basically watching from a skybox. But Stone Cold comes out initially here, cuts a promo about how he's so excited. It's his first pay-per-view as GM, and he's so excited to watch the matches go on. And he's going to go up, and, you know, instead of sitting backstage, he's going to be up with the Redneck Heaven and drink some beers and eat hot dogs. He gives a beer to Taz, who apparently spills half of it, which it was great hearing Michael Cole sort of like beat on Taz, like, Stone Cold gives you a beer, you drop half of it. But yeah, he goes up into Hooker Heaven, and as I said, Eric Bischoff comes in later, and throughout the night they keep going back to him, and it ends with Stone Cold getting Bischoff so drunk and so full that he literally he throws up on a girl and then throws up into the fans. Which, how they didn't get sued for that, I don't know. He blows chunks. So it's not the first time we've seen somebody throw up on professional wrestling. Is it Titus O'Neil? I still find that bit with Titus O'Neil a couple months ago pretty hilarious. But yeah, and then he used to give Bischoff a beer bash. Well, that's the thing that goes on with there. It was fun throughout the pay-per-view because, again, it was used as a small time to give breathers between matches. Which actually kind of like better than having a just bullshit, you know, bathroom break match. You know, there's some time. there's one match that some people, girls, I think in particular, would consider a bathroom break. But I find it funny looking on the, it has the times of the matches. It says, time unknown. Can I vote for eternity? We'll get to that match later, though. Let's get to our first match of the evening, shall we? Our first match features the Doctor of Thugonomics, John Cena, with the FBI, Chuck Palumbo, and Johnny the Bull Stramboli with Nunzio versus Rhino, Spanky, and Chris Benoit in a six-man tag team match. I really enjoyed this match. This was a great opener. Again, Spanky, a.k.a. Brian Kendrick, I think really only just started in the WWE, and this match really showed off his ability to take punishment. It showed the FBI as a great tag team. It showed John Cena as a pretty good, unique villain. He wasn't necessarily the one that completely took shortcuts, but, you know, he had that sort of edge to him that, again, looking back on his villain character, even though I didn't like it initially, you know, looking back, I'm like, wow, he played a pretty good villain. And again, I wouldn't mind him being a villain. I just don't think they could do it now with all that he's done as a face. But again, that's a discussion and an argument that can go on for hours, and that's not the place for here. But it was a good back and forth match. Rhino was probably the weakest link in this match, only because he didn't do that much. But you know, the hot tag to Chris Benoit, and then of course the blind tag by Brian Kendrick. And again, just the absolute chaos, and then the finish of the match, the kiss of death, as I believe it's called, the backbreaker leg drop combo, pretty impressed. And like, Brian Kendrick sold that move like a motherfucker. I mean, he's like, so I'm like, oh my god, they motherfucking killed him. So great opening match. Our next match, our second match, by the way, that match went all about basically 4 minutes, technically 3 minutes and 58 seconds. Our next match is about, not quite twice as long, but our next match is La Resistance, which is the tag team of Savon Grande and Rene Dupree, versus Test and Scott Steiner with Stacy Keibler. You know, all of a sudden now, I want to go into my Rip Van Winkle voice that I was doing a couple, like, our next match is La Resistance, featuring Savon Grande and Rene Dupree, versus Tess and Scott Steiner with Stacy Keibler in a tag team match. You know what? For that matter, I'm actually going to do that. Rick, you're going to call the matches. But what will Doug Mortimer say? I'll handle him. I'll pass a bribe under the table or something. By the way, you didn't hear that. I'll pass it under the table. I'm going to get so killed. Don't kill me, Dark Mortimer. But yeah, La Resistance versus Tess and Scott Steiner. Pretty good match. Okay. I can't say that with a straight face. It was an average match. It was okay. It was you kept waiting for something to happen with Test and Scott Steiner, so that Live Resistance would win. You know, Live Resistance made a pretty good tag team, and again, a lot of their heat came from their speaking. I thought they were just pretty vanilla in the ring. Their finishing move is about the only good thing about the tag team, and they move well as a tag team. I mean, they're a good tag team, and as wrestlers, I think they were better as a tag team, because certainly their single gimmicks did not work. I mean, a lot of Resistance would be a pretty good stable, excuse me, when Rob Conway would join them, the American... a traitor, as you will. You know, here, pretty good match, and I love the story. Again, it seemed, even though this is supposed to be the debut, and this is what I felt was wrong with the match, is that this is supposed to be the debut of La Resistance, and yet, the main story seems more to be the, you know, growing animosity between Test and Scott Steiner over Test's girlfriend, Stacy Keibler. And, you know, I don't really like that when, you know, you're having a wrestler's debut. You know, if you're basically going to have something that to put the new wrestlers over, the new wrestlers need to look, even if they're a heel, they need to look strong, and I don't think that they really look strong here, and I think that hurt them in the long run, and it made it take some time. I mean, they had the heat, but that came more from the characters. As far as wrestling, I really wasn't impressed by them. And I think that had a lot to do with the storyline in this first match, to where you go ahead, Test and Scott Steiner, and it was more about them. But, you know, so pretty vanilla match, but, you know, pretty decent for a debut for Law of Resistance, even if it didn't impress me. That takes us to our next match, if you will, Rick Van Winkle. Our next match is Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri, the Japanese Buzzsaw versus Team Angle of Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, the WWE Tag Team Champions, in a ladder match. Thank you, Rick. Yeah, a ladder match with Eddie Guerrero. You know it's gonna be good. This is, by far, this is not one of the best ladder matches. I mean, obviously, WWE Network, on their countdown this past week had, the countdown was the top 10 best ladder matches. And, by the way, I was really impressed that, number 3 turned out to be John Cena and Edge in TLC. And, I want to say it was 2007, 2008, I believe 2007, when it was in Edge's hometown. I was pretty impressed by it, but this did not make the list. Though it, clips of it were shown. But this was, you know, a pretty interesting tag team ladder match. It went 14 minutes and 18 seconds. There was a lot of good spots. I mean, you see flashes of what Shelton Benjamin would later do in ladder matches. I mean, Shelton Benjamin is one of those wrestlers I wish was still with the WWE. I really wish, like Kofi Kingston, I really wish they would have pushed him. Because I think he could be making a great WWE champion right now. But now, Team Angle, Charlie, you know, the world's greatest tag team of Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. And just, again, each wrestler showing unique abilities with, like, you know, Tajiri being a Japanese buzzsaw, just be showing that classic ECW style. Eddie Guerrero showing classic ladder moments like the Hilo powerbomb, you know, where he, they're on the top of the ladder and he jumps over, catches the guy, and powerbombs him. Of course, I don't think he did it any better. You know, the best time he's ever done that, I believe, has been when he faced RVD in a ladder match for the Intercontinental title in 2002. But, which, by the way, that did make the list. And they even tried to have the fan jumped in and, like, tried to attack Eddie Guerrero, and Eddie Guerrero punched him in the face. So, see? That guy from South Africa wasn't the first. I keep going to things that remind me of other things. But, no, it was a really good match, and I love the finish. And that was the thing. I love the finish. Just people going everywhere, you know, the finish came, you know, Charlie Haas had been Hilo powerbomb and was, like, dead. And, you know, you had Eddie Guerrero and Shelton Benjamin fighting on the top of the ladder. All right, they were on the same ladder, and Shelton Benjamin was trying to get him. Tajiri gets up on the ladder. Eddie Guerrero opens his legs. Green mist. Shelton Benjamin goes down. Eddie Guerrero pulls Tajiri up. They both bring down the tag team titles. And are the new WWE Tag Team Champions. And again, I just liked all the story elements. This was in the time where you had that great rivalry between Los Guerreros and Team Angle. And of course, at this time, Chavo had been injured. And that's why Tajiri was Eddie's tag team partner. I probably should have mentioned that before. But no, just a really good, solid tag team ladder match for the Tag Team Champions. It's not the best, but by far, it's not the worst. It's very enjoyable, as I find most ladder matches to be quite honest. That brings us to our next match of the evening. Rick, if you will, sir. Our next match is a battle royal for the vacant WWE Intercontinental Championship. Our match features Christian, Val Venus, Chris Jericho, Lance Storm, Test, Rob Van Dam, Kane, Goldust, and Booker T. Thank you, Rick. That joke's already getting tired, isn't it? I like the voice! Don't judge me! But yeah. Battle Royal for the WWE Intercontinental Champion. Now, before this, they had this whole, Actually, I think there was two things before this. One was they had a funny little segment where Shane Helms, as Shane Helms, reporter for the Daily Globe, interviewed Mr. America. And this whole superhero bit to where, I'm not supposed to tell me that you, Mr. America, are really Hulk Hogan. What's up with that? And Hulk Hogan, well, my sources, brother, tell me that you're really the Hurricane. Well, my sources must be really misinformed, because obviously you are Mr. America. And brother, my sources must be really misinformed, because you're obviously Shane Helms, just a reporter. It's like, what the fuck am I watching? I mean, I know it's poking fun at superheroes, and I enjoy it, but what the fuck am I watching? And of course, they had a little, here's the history of the Intercontinental Championship. And all the, classic moments from the Intercontinental Championship. Shawn Michaels flying off the ladder at WrestleMania 10, the Ultimate Warrior running down the lane to face the Honky Tonk Warrior. The classics. And of course, they had Pat Patterson there to award the champion, which means Pat's gonna get knocked the fuck out. Anytime Pat Patterson gets into the ring, anybody want to put a timer on how long it's gonna take Pat to get knocked the fuck out? But you know what? For a battle royal, it was pretty good. Pretty standard, but pretty good. It was enjoyable. The storylines are really what made it good. I mean, because it's a battle royal. It's wrestlers trying to throw each other over the top rope. And so, attempted backstabs that backfire. This is around the time where I think Booker T and Goldust had started to form a tag team. And so Goldust, tries to backstab his friend, and Booker T catches him and is like, "Oh, you got me that time." The best one though was the one was Chris Jericho getting backstabbed by Christian, to where he goes for the lion salt, Christian eliminates him, and I'm like, my God, that was so shocking. Great heel finish for Christian to win the title, to where he gets thrown out and pulls a Stone Cold Steve Austin because the referee had been knocked out, because it's not like Pat Patterson's there or any other referee should be there, and gets back in the ring, hits Booker T with the, after knocking Pat Patterson the fuck out, grabs the belt, knocks Booker T out, throws him out, and becomes champion. Which would start a great feud between him and Booker T. So I found the match to be very, very enjoyable. Which takes us to our next match. A match that I've been looking forward to reviewing since I started this show. This is one of my top 10 favorite moments in all of WWE pay-per-views. Oh my God, I cannot wait to. So, we'll get into it right after these messages. So, see you on the other side, folks. After these messages, we'll be right back.
My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Dad.
We need to record another new trailer.
Another one?
Yes. You know that we read comics and then talk about comics, because as we've established, talking about comics you've not read is just dumb.
Yeah, and you make me do it every Thursday.
Well, we've moved.
Have we?
Yes, we have outgrown our old location.
I don't feel like I've moved.
And we have now moved to twotruefreaks.com.
What was that again?
Twotruefreaks.com. Hey, Kids Comics, still every Thursday at twotruefreaks.com.
Hello, podcast listener. Do you like
Ready to Form Voltron?
Or maybe how about
I am Batman?
Or
this is a job for Superman.
Do you remember
Power Rangers?
Or this?
Right away, Michael.
Or maybe even this?
Autobots, transform!
Or this?
By the power of Grayskull!
Or
for the honor of Grayskull!
Or have you seen the latest episode of
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
If you answered yes to any of these questions, then check out Charlie's Geekcast, hosted by me, Charlie Niemeyer. Charlie's Geekcast is a bi-weekly podcast covering comics and other geek stuff. The first episode of each month is devoted to comics, where I look at random comics from my collection. The other episode of the month is devoted to whatever else I want to talk about, such as movies, TV shows, cartoons, video games, and more. Feel free to check it out at www.charliesgeekcast.com.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Yeah, play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic, foolish emotions, a constant irritant,
and tantamount out freak!
Two!
Well, I'm the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh,
shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money. This isn't the biggest bag over the head. Punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Yeah, goddamn lucky he didn't kill all of them.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now, come on, let's go.
Thank God she likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I said shut up! It's a manhunt! A manhunt!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and so let's get back into that match. I'm not even going to do the Rick Van Winkle, because I can't. Ladies and gentlemen, the match I've been waiting to review, the Bikini Challenge between Sable and Tori Wilson. Now, it might surprise you that I'm actually going to start off with a criticism of this match. Now, before this match even started, they had a little sort of very sexy preview thing with, you know, Sable and Tori, and like they're like, "Can I borrow some oil?" And I'm like, "Thank you, God! Thank you, God! Thank you, God!" She got legs, and she know how to use them. And I am going to be serious, by the way, about this match, because there's something I want to talk about in regards to bikini challenges after I review this match. So we are going to be a bit serious in just a moment. But the criticism comes with, they have, you know, Taz comes out, and by the way, the commentary for this match, God makes this match. This, because this is a comedy bit, and they play it wonderfully, and it makes me laugh so hard. You know, Taz comes out like, you know, say this, you know, I come out and, you know, Gibson like, you know, time for the bikini challenge, and then hits Tori Wilson's music, and they have Tori Wilson doing, so, I guess, this sexual sort of duet dance with Lillian Garcia. Now, don't get me wrong. I like Lillian Garcia. She has a wonderful voice, and I understand they were doing it, I guess, to promote her CD that they were producing. Whatever. And she's a beautiful woman. There's a difference between beautiful and sexy. And sometimes they don't mix. And it just wasn't the right thing. She's a beautiful woman. She's not... And she can be sexy. That moment, she wasn't sexy. And that wasn't sexy. It could have ruined the whole thing. Thank God Tori and Sable knocked this motherfucker out the motherfucking park. But, yeah, I just didn't like that entrance of Tori Wilson. It's like... Like, why are you doing this? I don't want to see her kiss Lillian Garcia. I want to see her kiss Sable. Which they would provide me later. And many nights of good dreams. Of course, here comes Sable. In a robe that... Okay, you do realize you're supposed to cover up your bikini, right? Everybody, like... That's the whole part. You're supposed to reveal it. You're not exactly not revealing it. But, you know, then Taz, in classic Taz way, you know, reveals the rules. So here are the rules. You know, I'm going to give each of you a chance. And you got 30 seconds to, you know, show your bikinis, your booties, your whole thing. And then the great people of North Kakalaki, North Carolina, will judge the winner. I can't do Taz. I probably wouldn't make sense if I actually could do Taz. But that's besides the point. But, yeah, it starts off with Table, and oh my goodness. Oh, dear God. Thank you, God. Probably the only bikini she's ever worn that's been better than that was probably the handprints. But, oh my. I'm like, thank God this is pay-per-view, because they could never get away with that on TV. This was a bikini challenge that had to happen on pay-per-view. Because the bikinis, mind you, these two women wore, they could not get away with on television, whether it be Raw or SmackDown. But there's a reason this had to be on pay-per-view. This was two Playboy cover girls. It's like, putting on bikinis, like, how far can we go before we get arrested? I really hope that before that, somebody went on, and I'm like, women, and more importantly, mothers with children, we're about to do this bikini contest. This is for the men, but more importantly, if you're one of those women that don't like women bikinis, or don't like beautiful women bikinis, or whatever, this might be a good time for you to head to the concession stands or the bathrooms. Don't mind your husbands, they'll be just fine. But then Tori came out, and of course she actually had a pretty standard bikini with, you know, the Playboy bunnies, and it was cute and sexy. Of course, the obvious winner there had to have been Sable, but somehow ends up in a tie. Which I don't know if it was audio. I don't know if that really did end up in a tie. But it sounded like everybody was cheering for everybody. And of course, the comedy here would, you know, they keep cutting to the king, who's like patting his head down with a with tissues or something. It's like, damn, king, you're in public. You can't wait to get to your hotel room. Damn, man. But it's tied. So Taz goes to do it again. And Tori says, wait, Taz, I wasn't quite done yet. I'm like, okay. I'm not going to stop you. I'm like, neither are we, Taz. We want to see more. And then she takes off the black Playboy bikini and bottom to reveal a silver sparkled bedazzled itsy bitsy thong bikini. Oh my, I don't know how to describe it. Like two thin strips right here, and then there's the thong. Oh my goodness. Oh my god. I'd always been a fan of Tori Wilson, but never more than right there. I'm like, thank you. I literally wanted to jump to the TV set. Please marry me. Yes, I'm shallow. Please marry me. And she ends up winning. And then, of course, and mind you, she's taking off. They cut the king. Keep going. King's like almost pulling JR's arm out of his socket. Most hilarious thing. And of course, it ends with her kissing Sable and Taz having a literally heart attack and like stumbling on his ass in the ring. It's so hilarious. It was a great bikini contest. Now, obviously, I'm making myself seem more shallow than I am. Like I said, this is a great bikini challenge, and it was for pay-per-view because of the bikinis they were wearing. But more importantly, this was just a fun bit, and that's the thing. This was fun. This wasn't meant to say that women can't wrestle. Because, mind you, we had a pretty good women's title match later in the evening, which we'll get to in a couple minutes. But this wasn't meant to make women look bad. You know, these were two valets facing off. They're not wrestlers. So when you're not a wrestler, what do you do? Well, when you're a, you know, female valet who's all about, and part of your job description is your beauty, and you're facing off against another beautiful person, you basically have a beauty challenge. In this case, the beauty contest was who looks better in a bikini. And the whole story surrounding this made sense. The build-up to this. There was an actual story around this. I will give people who hate the bikini challenges and bikini contests when it's, you know, oh, hey, it's Thanksgiving. Let's have a bikini contest. Hey, it's Halloween. Let's have a costume contest. I can understand, looking back on those, as much as I may like some of them, I can understand them. Because there was a point to where, I'll agree, it did seem like every time there was an important event, it was like, well, we're having an important event, so let's have a bikini contest. You know, or, you know, beauty contest where our beautiful valet divas get in sexy outfits. And in particular, in the later year, during the PG era, it was like, they're not even bikinis anymore, they're just swimsuits. And there's really nothing sexy or, I mean, they're beautiful, but there's nothing really sexy about them. It's just like, the fun's all gone. And that's the point, is that this was supposed to be about fun. Why? Because Tori and Sable were allowed to be characters. And this is something that I really feel is important to talk about when it comes to, you know, talking about how women are portrayed in media, is that they're playing characters. It's wonderful that we want to sit there and talk about how women are portrayed. And, you know, it is bad when you have a media sitting there and saying that, you know, all women can only do this. Because, and that should be, for anybody, it should be that anybody can do anything they want. They can be whoever they want. But that's not what this is sitting there and saying. This is two characters. This is a fun contest between two characters who are basically, they're not wrestlers. They're not big, strong people who fight each other. They're basically wrestling each other with their looks. It's a contest of looks. That's what it is. by two characters who are about looks. And it's not saying that they can't, you know, Sable can wrestle, and Sable would wrestle after this. And Tori could wrestle during this time, you know, she was actually pretty decent as a wrestler. When she got the puppy, that's when she became bad. But before that, she could actually pretty wrestle pretty decently. They weren't five-star matches like Trish and Lita were putting on, but still, they were there. But again, more importantly, they were allowed to be characters. And this is something I think they're starting to allow again in the WWE with some of the divas. But for a time there, from like 2009 to 2011, the divas were not allowed to be characters. They had to be role models. And, you know, when you force something to be a role model, it stops being a role model. Because at that point, the person becomes vanilla, and they become, you know, that's really what the problem with John Cena is. And I don't think anybody talks about this, is that the problem with his face character wasn't that he was a face or that he was for the kids, is that he was all about being a role model, and that's all he seemed to be about. And it did sometimes stale up his matches. It made his matches seem very simple, and especially when you had other wrestlers who weren't into it, it made him seem, oh, he's all about the role model, of course he's gonna win, he's Super Cena, he's gonna no-sell everything and that stuff. Recently, they've allowed John Cena to go back to being a character again. And what a difference it's made. Especially with Bray Wyatt. Same thing here. You know, all the women in WWE were allowed to be characters. Some could wrestle. The ones who could wrestle were allowed to wrestle and put on some great matches, like as we'll see in a couple minutes when we talk about the four-way women's match. But here you had Tori Wilson and Sable. They basically dueled each other with their beauty in a beauty contest. And you know what? Tell me that it was not fun. Tell me that you weren't laughing in some of the things that were being said. Tell me you weren't charmed by their beauty. Tell me that, you know, at the end of the day, that this little challenge wasn't enjoyable. Because you're lying to yourself. The fact is, it was extremely enjoyable. I had so much fun watching it. I was laughing my ass off. I was amazed by their beauty. I want to ask both women to marry him. And the only other criticism of this is, how the fuck does Sable end up with Brock fucking Lesnar? I'm going to kill that motherfucker. Okay, I'm not. But it's like, how the fuck does she end up with that? Really? That, as we'll see him later, by the way. But that's the thing that pisses people off, by the way. But I digress. Well, shall we move on to our next match? Because I think I've been talking about this for 10 minutes. let us move on. You know, Rick, will you take to the next match? Yes, sir. Our next match features Mr. Brotherfucker with a one-legged patriot versus the Coconut Man with a spider dude. No, but thank you, Rick Van Winkle. No, by spider dude, I'm not talking about Spidey Dude from SpideyDude.com and Spidey Kicks Butt, home of the Clone Soccer Chronicles. And Zach, I expect the check in the mail. The fictional check I will never get that basically consists of Zach driving from Texas to New Jersey to run me over in the middle of the street. Mr. America, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan, in the worst disguise ever made, versus Roddy Piper with Sean O'Hare. The match is not quintessential, because there's really nothing. I mean, it's two old guys fighting. All of this was about the story, and the story is what really drives this match. The match itself is not really good. I mean, Roddy Piper was, I can't remember what age Roddy Piper was at this time. I'll look it up in just a second. But you had Hulk Hogan, who was in his early 50s, I believe. Roddy Piper, he's 60, actually. So, wait a minute. He was 50. So you had two guys in their 50s with bad knees and bad hips and possible cancer. And I hate to make that seem like that's a joke, because God bless Roddy Piper, and the fact that he's able to overcome that shows you how great of a man he is. But again, it was all the story. You know, Vince had, you know, because he had lost to Hogan at WrestleMania that year, basically banned him from the WWE. So he comes back as Mr. America, because, you know, Seth said, I have this new wrestler, Mr. America. And it's obviously Hulk Hogan. And, of course, all the storylines with the lie detector and everything. And, of course, in this story element, they introduced Zach Gowen, the one-legged wrestler. And, you know, I really liked Zach Gowen. I thought he was interesting. It was something different. It was something refreshing. I mean, to see a one-legged wrestler was really interesting. And he, you know what? Zach Gowen could wrestle. Again, the match itself is pretty interesting. I mean, the obvious thing to where, you know, the miscommunication, and Sean O'Hare hits Piper, Mr. America eliminates him, hits the leg drop, gets the win. You know, pretty self-standard, but the story I really liked. I really liked the story that went along with this match. So, enjoyable match. Rick, if you'll let people know of the next match.
Yes, sir.
A big super setter versus a fat game for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Thank you, Rick. Yeah. This was just a goddamn fight between Kevin Nash and Triple H. Just a fight. And you knew somebody was going to be disqualified. And sure enough, Triple H gets disqualified. Retains the title, by the way. But yeah, this was just a brutal fight. And the spot at the end, I mean, there's not much to say about this. Other than, just, it was a fight. There was really no wrestling. It was Kevin Nash and Triple H beating the hell out of each other. Again, great storytelling elements here that I really enjoyed. Again, just beating the hell out of each other. And it's like, who's going to get disqualified first? Because both were pushing the ref. Both were trying to intimidate. Both were using illegal stuff. And the referee allowed it as long as it could go. By the way, Triple H came in with Ric Flair. Which, again, great pop for Rick. They're in Flair country, obviously. You know, his music here. And it's like, the noise is deafening in the arena. In fact, of all four wrestlers that get introduced, because Shawn Michaels came in with Kevin Nash, all of them have separate entrances. The only one who gets booed is Triple H, but even he only gets booed a little. But yeah, you know, the match starts with Kevin Nash going at Triple H, and then Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair fighting, and they get thrown to the back. But yeah, just back and forth, and of course the ending to where Kevin Nash jackknife power bombs Triple H through the Raw announce table, which again, the Raw announce table was by the entranceway, where the SmackDown Spanish one was by the ring. But yeah. But that was a pretty nice spot. The jackknife power bomb through the table of Triple H. So I found it to be a bit. You know, it's not short. It's about 7 minutes 25 seconds. But it's just watching two people beat the hell at each other. It's not really a match as much as it is a brawl. And you know what? For a brawl, it was pretty fun. Again, it really continued the storyline very well. Our next match, again, I'm not going to do into Rick Van Winkle, because more importantly, I couldn't find any jokes for these wrestlers. You have the WWE Women's Champion Jazz with Theodore Long versus Victoria with Stevie Richards, Jacqueline, and the Master of Satisfaction, Trish Stratus, in a fatal four-way for the WWE Women's Championship. I really like this match. This was a pretty good fatal four-way between all four women. All of them had some great spots throughout the match. The brutal one to where Trish Stratus is going for I believe the Bulldog is called Stratus Faction, if I remember right. Yeah, it's Stratus Faction, which is the springboard, or the Bulldog, where she springs off the ropes and everything, gets countered, and he gets thrown all the way over the top rope to the floor, which was brutal. The only thing I didn't like was that the finish. Because the finish kind of felt a bit sloppy with the DDT. And it just seemingly happened out of nowhere. It didn't seem like there was a flow to the finish happening. But still, it was a really good women's match. And again, these women were allowed to be characters. You know, some were in with the female wrestlers. Some were sexy. Some were strong. Some were both strong and sexy. And they were allowed to be characters, which allowed them to have different movesets. Because, again, that's the other thing. When you have to be role models, it seems like the movesets are tied down. And so here, allowed to be characters, all have unique movesets. So, very enjoyable match. That brings us to our final match of the evening. So, Rick, if you will. Yes, sir. Our final match features a big blow versus the man who would later go on to break The Undertaker's undefeated streak at WrestleMania for the WWE Championship in a stretcher match. Yes. Brock Lesnar, the WWE Champion, versus The Big Show in a stretcher match. Now, one thing that I thought that was interesting to bring up is that the last stretcher match in the WWE at that time was Andre the Giant versus Killer Khan. And they showed footage from that match, which I found interesting. But this was a pretty... You know, I have to say, I enjoyed this match more than I thought it would. You know, it's Big Show versus Brock Lesnar. I actually enjoyed their feud a lot because I thought they had some good... Because, again, it's that classic, you know, the irremovable force versus the unstoppable object. And, again, you know, Brock Lesnar's power and brute strength versus the Big Show's big girth. And I enjoyed their match. Of course, the most memorable of their matches obviously being the SmackDown match where they fucking explode the ring. But that match, of course, would come after this. But yeah, you know, pretty brutal match hitting each other with, you know, the flat stretcher board and everything. And again, really no storytelling. Again, it's another one of those sort of brawls where they have weapons and they're hitting each other with stretchers and everything. And again, the whole, you know, oh, is he going to win it now? No. And the false finishes as they're trying to push each other to the yellow line. And of course, there's one moment to where, you know, Brock Lesnar gets the upper hand. He says, you know, I have a better idea. And he goes to the back. As he goes to the back, Big Show stumbles up on his feet in the ring. And then Rey Mysterio music hits. And again, the whole storyline of this match coming about was that at the last pay-per-view, Big Show had injured Rey Mysterio, and when he was strapped to a stretcher, the flatboard stretcher, he had picked him up and slammed him against the ring post, injuring him further. So here was his official comeback. He comes in the ring and starts, you know, delivers a 619 to the gut of the Big Show and starts fighting with him. He has a sleeper hold on him, and then out of nowhere, here comes Brock Lesnar with a forklift. As we said before, he tried to pin him with a forklift. In fact, he does, technically, by the way that this match ends, if you can count it as a pin, he does pin him with a forklift. I just find it interesting. I had not seen this match in such a long time. I forgot that he used a forklift to do it. And I find it interesting that, you know, here I'm watching another WWE Championship match against a big man with a forklift is used. And literally, 2 weeks earlier, you had Daniel Bryan doing the same thing almost to Kane. Except in that case, it was he does a flying headbutt off the top and the pin happens in the ring. It's not a stretcher match. But yeah, the flying crossbody off the forklift, pretty impressive. Followed by the F5, and then, of course, the stacking of the Big Show onto the forklift for the win. The irony there, considering what has happened recently in the WWE, just made me laugh so hard. But you know what? It was a pretty good match. I found the forklift to be funny on multiple things. And, you know, I think it is worth watching. So, all in all, I thought this would be an extremely well pay-per-view. I very much enjoyed it. Of the 9 matches, there weren't really any duds outside of the Law of Resistance Test and Scott Steiner match, which wasn't, again, it wasn't that it was bad, but just wasn't good. But I enjoyed every match on this card. For some reason or other, whether it was that the actual wrestling in the match was good, like the Eddie Guerrero, Tajiri, and Team Angle ladder match, or the, you know, the John Cena FBI, Rhino, Spanky, and Chris Benoit six-man tag match, or you had the storyline elements of, like, Kevin Nash, Triple H, Mr. America, Roddy Piper, and again, just the overall funness of, like, Torrey Wilson and Sable. You know, I don't think you're going to see any 5-star matches here. At best, maybe a 3.5. But they're all pretty solid matches. They're all just fun to watch. And that's the thing is, again, the point is to have fun. I definitely think this pay-per-view is worth checking out. I think it's one of the better pay-per-views of 2003. So, overall, you know what? I give Judgment Day 2003 a 4 out of 5. And I want to add that I'd probably give it a 3.5, but the Torrey Wilson Sable thing knocks it up to a 4. Because to me, Torrey Wilson and Sable is match of the night. That stole the goddamn show for me. Second best match of the night was Eddie Guerrero Tajiri versus Team Angle. And then the third best was John Cena and the FBI versus Rhino, Spanky, and Chris Benoit. So, 4 out of 5 for me for Judgment Day 2003. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this. So, probably a death threat and a stop and desist letter from Dark Mortimer. Wait, what am I saying? Dark Mortimer is not going to give me a stop and deceased letter. He's just going to hunt me down and kill me. So while I'm on the run, I do not know what I'm going to be reviewing next week, as I'll reveal a little bit later. But it will happen in May. But if you have any comments of any kind that you want to let me know, remember there are several ways you can find us. One, you can email us at AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. That's AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on Facebook by going to Facebook.com and searching for the AppSolution Network. We're the one with the white logo with the circle and the A and the N in it. Like us and leave us a comment there. You can also find us on Stitcher. That's www.stitcher.com. Go to Stitcher.com and search for the AppSolution Network, where you can find all the AppSolution Network shows there. And, of course, you can also find us on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. While you're there, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content, which of course includes the Otaku Momentum, anime, the Anicast, which is new cast by our good friend Relic over, who also does Rift Down with me. Soon the first episode of Mega Myths from my good friend Edwin is going to be up there. And of course, Tom's Prerogative, which this week will feature Batman Beyond. Of course, also make sure you check out the Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris over at www.shaftplus.com. And, of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which will feature several reviews of Godzilla 2014. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, make sure you check out my other one, the Comic Book Crazy Podcasting Network, features CM Juice, Comic Book Crazy, and, of course, Hexcast and Spectacular Webs, all which will have new episodes soon. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site. That, of course, includes Clone Saga Chronicles and SpideyKicksButt.com. Michael Bailey infused from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crossways, Steve Insulkner's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it, I'm too negative, but I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. I stand among two feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling, my love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. And reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but your dream.